As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we're going to dive into the rumor mill. Oh my God, it is spicy out there in NBA land. Trades abound. Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Serge Ibaka, Chris Paul. We're going to talk about it all. Plus, even more juicy draft discussion. It's spicy. It's juicy. It's a delicious dish of basketballs for your ears.
Terrible.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic. Get yourself behind that paywall. $1 a week. Go to TheAthletic.com/GlueGuys. Brian?
Michael.
There is some whispers and some rumors
out there
right now.
Who's talking? What are they saying?
There's some buzzy buzz buzz. So we sit here. So Brian and I, let's, in full honesty, as we always do, we had recorded a two-part draft preview pod all at once, and we did that 2 days ago. And now it's not dated because you're going to hear a lot of that conversation. But there's a bulk of it that we needed to put a nice, beautiful topper onto, and this is that topper we're putting on.
This
the
is the
condom.
Flitter.
Right now.
No, oh, the floater of rum on your pina colada. That's what this is.
What's your take on pina coladas?
Big. I'm a huge fan. Love
is that right?
Anything stupid, like stupid sugary cocktail, I am 100% all about. Love them.
I am stupid sugar cocktail till I die, except for pina coladas.
Really? Interesting.
Pina coladas are the spinach artichoke dip.
Wow. Which is already a terrible take. Terrible. We got to take it. Next time you come into the city, we'll go to Zombie Hut up the street for me. Big recommend. Big shout out for Zombie Hut. Sponsoring the show this week is Zombie Hut. And their whole menu is a bunch of reasonably priced, insanely sweet cocktails. It's very good.
Beautiful. Yeah. Excellent. Speaking of sweetness and also drunkenness, the NBA. Yes. Yeah, so here's where we are. And again, we're recording this at 3:06 on Thursday, November the 12th. All of this could change in very short succession. But what we know right now is that there are several... going into an offseason when we didn't think anything was going to happen that exciting, now Russell Westbrook may be available. Chris Paul's probably going to go to the Phoenix Suns. James Harden, not quite yet available, but if Russell Westbrook gets traded for nothing...
But didn't
I would imagine
he, didn't
he,
he say
happy.
He was locked in on this season? He said he was locked in, Mike. That means something.
He's locked in. So I urge everyone, one, you should get behind the paywall of The Athletic and then read the story from Sham Sharania, Sam Amick, and Kelly Eco about what's going on with the Rockets, because basically the story is that Russell Westbrook isn't happy. that everyone isn't as hardcore as he is. And one of the guys he's not happy with is his very good friend, which is stressed over and over again, James Harden. I'm getting the sense that James Harden doesn't care that much.
You know when someone says something is locked in? Like if you're like, let's go get a drink on Tuesday, I'm like, lock that in. And there's a 75% chance that drink is not happening.
I'm showing up to that bar after getting on the subway thinking, where the hell is Brian?
Yeah. You've locked that in.
So I'm not even going to do the whole, like, would you want Russell Westbrook thing. I don't think either of us would want Russell Westbrook, but I will ask you, do you want?
Okay. I have no problem saying I just don't. Like, it's a mismatch on a variety of levels. Like, it's just not going to happen.
I mean, we joked about, I think in our LeVert Line series, which I'll continue to reference, that Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, there may be like sticky feelings if you brought them back. I'm sure Kevin Durant's actually probably closer at this point to Russell Westbrook than he was when he left Oklahoma City, but there's still enough noise there that it doesn't feel like the best pairing to bring back.
I'm being honest here. I wouldn't want him for free. Like, I wouldn't want him if he paid me. That's how I feel about that, how badly that matches with what we got over here.
This is the moment where I defend Russell Westbrook for a bit. Okay. He's not right for the Brooklyn Nets. That's obvious. I don't think he's right for the Knicks, but it's a very Knicks thing to do.
That is a Knicks thing to do.
But I said, as many people did on Twitter, even before the reports came out, this is a Michael Jordan Charlotte Hornets move, and now Shams Charania has backed it up with reporting that the Hornets, because Jordan's whole GM philosophy, even though he's not technically the GM, he's always wanted four-year seniors from college because they're like the most obvious to being good. And Russell Westbrook, I think he's also one. He's a Jordan brand athlete, which it matters a little bit.
On brand.
On brand, literally.
That's why I said it.
And it's just like if Michael Jordan's watching the NBA, I would imagine the guys he appreciates the most are like the Russell Westbrooks of the world, right? Like the biggest of tryhards who never say die and will go to the hilt to win a game at any cost or will sacrifice their bodies. Now, this is the defense of Russell Westbrook. The Hornets would be lucky to have Russell Westbrook.
Oh, that's a great fit. That's the fit. That's 100% where they should go.
Like, imagine your life as a Hornets fan. The most exciting thing that has happened to you is that they changed the colors and the team name to the Hornets. They brought back the teal, right? So you're sitting there, like, Kemba Walker was totally great. Everyone loved him. But, like, there was a ceiling with a Kemba Walker-led team. I don't know. I mean, put Russell Westbrook back on that team. They're a seventh seed, and that's fun. That's,
Russell Westbrook is, I think, the height of great player, like, good to great player on a bad team, like, watchability. That makes the watchability through the roof, right? Just for a variety of reasons. Because also he'll, like, dog on the other guys on the team. The whole thing, it'll just be a whole calamity like spectacle. It's great. It's good stuff.
And like, I know I kind of hate like the whole like the NBA is an entertainment business, not a basketball business. Like, yeah, I get it. It is. But it is an entertainment business. Like, it should be fun to watch basketball. And Russell Westbrook with James Harden, not fun. And not really all that good together. Russell Westbrook by himself in Charlotte, just dominating and dunking on guys, going for triple doubles. That's fun. I'd rather have that in my life as an NBA fan than him trying to fit in with James Harden when it's not a perfect fit. He doesn't fit in Houston. I get why he wants to leave. I think it's funny that, you know, there was like the Russell Westbrook defenders will mostly push back to like, oh, he would always go for a winning chance. Well, he has an opportunity to win with James Harden, and he obviously doesn't want to be there. Mm-hmm. Go to Charlotte. Okay, if he gets traded to the Knicks, how does that make you feel as a Nets fan if that were to happen?
I like it. I like it for both reasons. I like it because of the – well, let me think about this actually. I mean, I think that the Tom Thibodeau Russell Westbrook experiment like deserves to be seen. Like,
That's like if Frankenstein – the monster – the Frankenstein monster himself made a Frankenstein monster.
Right, exactly.
But like a stronger, faster one. Right.
Part of me just wants to see that just to, you know, put those two in a cage and see what happens. But I do like as like a you know, decades long embittered Nets fan. I don't want to see anything good happen to the Knicks. And that could be construed as a good thing, which I would hope to avoid, I guess. That's sort of how I feel. Even though I know that it's not a good thing, like for the fabric of that team, I don't think it would be seen as a good thing. And that's enough to, for me not to want it. You know what I mean?
It would destroy RJ Barrett's development.
It would completely. Destroy like any, yeah. I mean, it completely, it's like, it's the most, like the biggest, dumbest Band-Aid to slap on that problem would be to get a Russell Westbrook style player, which would be a little bad long-term. But again, it would still be these Knicks fans coming out of the woodwork being like, we got him. We did it, boys. We got Westbrook.
How many Russell Westbrook jerseys would you see?
Quite a few.
A wash. The Gowanus Canal would be all, it'd be all Porzingis jerseys in the canal because everyone would throw them out the window. And the fun factor of the Knicks getting Westbrook is that you do have Knicks v. Nets, Durant v. Westbrook.
That's true. And they're still not competitive. So it's like the best, like you get to punch down, which is good. That's fun.
You know what would happen? Like the Knicks would win that first game.
I know.
Whenever it is. And then you, everything you would hear is like, who's the king of New York? And right. Like that would happen. But then we could all like be like, oh, but then the Nets win the next five and everyone's happy.
But they won that one, you know, and they'll always have that. We can't, you know, whatever.
There's a couple other fallout elements to the Rockets exploding, if you will. James Harden, let's say he becomes available, right? And you and I also discussed that, you know, like in the range of possibilities of all the guys who may be available, we talked a couple of times about James Harden because you and I both diagnosed that the Rockets were a combustible situation and that D'Antoni was likely gone. Now we know that, of course, that he is gone and now he's with the Nets. And which I guess I don't know how I fit that into the Nets should trade for James Harden thinking, right? But I feel like James Harden must love Mike D'Antoni. He made him partly an MVP. Anyways, here's the trade for James Harden.
Okay. I'm ready.
And I'm 3 first-round picks.
Not again.
LeVert and Dinwiddie. Because here's the thing with James Harden.
Okay, all right, good.
Everyone's going to want James Harden. Like where Westbrook has a select group of people who could really take him in. Miami's moving ahead of heaven and earth to get him. You know, like the Celtics maybe decide, oh, let's cash in Jaylen Brown and a couple of other big assets. Like, I think Harden, the amount of teams that would desire him is like the entire league, where Westbrook is a select group. So there's going to be a lot of competition for James Harden. I mean, frankly, he's the best offensive player in the NBA.
I mean,
has been for like,
think about splitting 4 years. The offensive load, because like James Harden really is at his best when he's just not like when he's not sharing the court with anyone else of equal stature, anywhere close to equal stature. So like not having him like staggering his minutes against Kyrie and Kevin Durant. It's fun to think about.
It's fun to think about. It's not going to happen. No, but if I tell you it's 3 first round picks, LeVert and Dinwiddie, and then there's some filler. There's Garrett Temple and Caruso. This works. Mm-hmm.
Does that strike you as feeling good
to your ears?
I mean, it seems that's like Well, let me really digest this. Having just come out of mortgaging a future, having just done that, that scares me a little bit.
Because the way you have to construct the trade is it has to be the all-in trade, right? So like what is the Nets version of an all-in trade? Like you put Jared Allen in their shirt. Like you could also do that too. And you maybe take out Rodion's Karuk's, because like partly what's going on in Houston is that their owner doesn't have any money, Tillman Fertitta, because I mean he says he does and I know he probably has a lot more money than I do, but all of his money is tied up in maybe not restaurants and casinos,
tough
places that tend to require foot traffic, and people aren't trafficking on their feet as much anymore.
Me not at all. Like not until I got 4 more days.
How's the old hoof doing?
It's funny you say that because you see somebody called Easy Money showed up on the Discord. Be on the Glue Guys. Probably the Discord again this season. I have not been active on it, but somebody named Easy Money showed up on there, and everyone's like, "Oh, hey, KD, like, what's up?" Thinking it was KD. This might make the final cut. Who knows? And I just jokingly said like, "How's the hoof?" to that guy. Literally the next day, I broke my foot. Literally the next day, there's nothing more karmically one-to-one
Ryan,
than that.
You're telling me Kevin Durant is trying to reach out to us?
I think so here's my line of thinking on this. I think that Kevin Durant is a guy that like spends time on the internet, and like I'm imagining that he that he doesn't know what Discord is. He's like, I don't know, he's like going around, sees Discord, hears about it, doesn't know what it is, pops into Discord for just to send a message, see what it does, how it works, figures out very quickly that he doesn't like it, doesn't want to be there, and then that's it. He's gone to back to Twitter. And there is like I'm going to put it at a non-zero 5% chance that Easy Money is the real Kevin Durant. Either way, I thought it was possible that it was him, and I asked him how the hoof was, and then I broke my foot. So that was
non-zero, as in Trump's lawyers.
Exactly.
Who
right.
We're in Gordon, Pennsylvania. There's a non-zero number of monitors during the election.
Right. The non-zero chance of anything.
Okay, the Harden trade's silly, right? It's like a ridiculous thing, but is that something you have to consider? Also because I would imagine Kevin Durant has a good relationship with James Harden, and if you could get him, because like the more and more I'm kind of thinking about Drew Holiday versus anything else, Drew Holiday is a great fit. I think I said before, if he was on the team, I think Nets fans would immediately love him. Like he would look great in between Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. But when you make that trade, and particularly if you're including LeVert, you no longer can make a Bradley Beal trade or like this James Harden thing. Like it just that apple that is still stuck up on the tree, this James Harden juicy apple. What's your favorite apple, Brian?
Northern Spy. The Northern Spies is where I go for it's a late in the fall. They're actually probably just coming in now. It's Northern Spy.
So a Northern Spy level apple just is ready to be plucked, but you don't have the ladder anymore to get to that apple if you need ladders to get to
those
apples.
Yeah.
But anyways, so I think that's kind of the key thing as we think about these trades, and we all fantasize about the trades. Now, here's some sub things I just want to throw out to you real quick. Let's say that Rockets, again, everything's crumbling below them. PJ Tucker, Robert Covington. PJ Tucker played at Texas with Kevin Durant. Robert Covington, I think every Nets fan basically wants in the world. Is that something that if you're Sean Marks, you're saying, I'm attacking? And which of those two do you want the most, PJ Tucker or Robert Covington?
Well, golly, this is a tough one, but I think I'm in PJ. I'm how I feel about thickness, and I'm down with the thickness. One of the things too I was thinking about was
what's the song? I'm down with the sickness.
Yeah, that's the you get it.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that. So the Mavs had a thing in Sports Illustrated that they were themselves horny for Spencer Dinwiddie, which checks out. So
that's been in a few different places too. But yeah.
Yeah. So that got me thinking. But there's no one there that really like jumps off the page. So three team territory with that.
There's so much of this trade discussion is such BS. Like the things being thrown out there. Like, so there was a report that the Hawks are willing to part with the 6th overall pick for Drew Holiday. And then immediately Chris Kirshner, who is the Hawks reporter for The Athletic, was like, that hasn't happened. Sources tell me that there's no way that's happened. And I believe Chris because he's literally hearing it from the Hawks. And I think it's like David Griffin, who runs the Pelicans, has a lot of friends in media, and he says that. And then the story gets out and it's all interesting, and they're trying to raise the value of Drew Holiday. I don't see it. Like, I don't see it for Drew Holiday and the Hawks. Like, there's just so much misinformation at this point. Like, I'm kind of even leery of this. There's a lot of LaMelo Ball to Minnesota buzz about how he's had a private workout with them and all that stuff. It's just all lies. So think about everything that basically happens is a lie, except for things like when Shyam Sharani reports Russell Westbrook wants out of Houston. Like that to me is like, there's no benefit for anyone putting that out there besides the Westbrook's.
Can I ask, has anyone made this comp with LaMelo Ball? No, having watched a fair amount of him. Just sorry. Michael Carter Williams. Do you ever hear people talk about that comp?
Yeah, I think
that's the if things go, yeah, if things go terribly wrong, he ends up being Michael Carter Williams. Yeah.
By the way, I could use a Michael Carter Williams on the Nets because he's turned himself into a nice little like defensive, not little, I mean, he's long, defensive guard.
Rangy.
And he can handle the ball a little bit. He can do like a quarter of Spencer Dinwiddie stuff.
Let's get him. Heck, what are we talking about for?
Yeah, that's what's the LaMelo Ball thing is like, there's enough people. So I heard Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz on Zach Lowe's podcast talking about like
the basketball people love LaMelo Ball. Like the people who really knows basketball think he's excellent. I think it's kind of crazy when you see his shot and you saw how he played in Australia, and like it just seemed like he was treating it like not even an AAU thing, just like an all-star game. But he's maybe the most talented person. That's where I love where the Nets are picking. I would rather have the 19th pick than the first overall pick, Brian, because I enjoy all the things. And we're going to talk about the draft. We have that whole conversation coming up. There's one more thing I wanted to hit before we go here, and then we'll go to the draft. Serge Ibaka, okay. Mike Mazzeo, who used to cover the Nets, now writing for Forbes, said this about Serge Ibaka. Kevin Durant has been recruiting close friend Serge Ibaka to join the Brooklyn Nets as a free agent, according to league sources. And it goes on about, you know, how much Durant loves Ibaka and how close they are. And of course, you and I have been tracking the Ibaka to Brooklyn for a while. I think there's something that is under-discussed that needs to be discussed. And it because this may be a possibility, it could prove out what may happen with the Nets transactions coming up. So the Nets are a tax-paying team. That means the only ability they have to sign a free agent is either a veteran minimum or the taxpayer mid-level exception, which is at $5.7 million a year right now. So that'd be a steep pay cut for your boy Serge. But you could do it, right? Like you could pitch it like, hey, here's $6 million. Come play for the Nets, win a championship, play with your friends. Everything's great.
Way. Yeah.
We have a great practice facility, all that stuff.
And you don't have to play in East Rutherford, potentially, Prudential Center, Newark, wherever that
is. Would you become a Raptors fan just because of your roots?
I would. If they were playing in Jersey? I would drop everything and we would become a Raptors podcast immediately, I think.
Probably better for our careers.
Hey!
Anyways, so the Serge can only play for $5.7 million on the mid-level exception if he wants to join the Nets, or veteran minimum. Okay. But he's not going to take a vet min because Serge can make much more money. The thing is, when the Nets activate that taxpayer mid-level exception, it hard caps them at $139 million. The taxpayer line's at $132. The hard cap, if you use that mid-level, is $139, meaning the Nets can't spend any more money. It's what happened with the Warriors this year when they signed D'Angelo Russell. It hard capped them, and it forced them to trade Andre Iguodala to then bring on D'Angelo Russell. Okay. Now that 139 is an important number because the Nets are basically already at 139 right now without having signed Joe Harris. If they want to sign Joe Harris, you can't sign Serge Ibaka. And if you want to sign Serge Ibaka, you can't sign Joe Harris unless they trade Torian Prince or they trade Caris LeVert or they trade Spencer Dinwiddie or a combination of all those guys and actually somehow decrease the salary that's coming in from all the guys they're sending out, drop their cap number down below. And then they could sign Joe Harris and Serge Ibaka and be under that 139 hard cap. Though they'd have to trade like Torian Prince a fair amount and not bring back a lot. Mm-hmm. So this Mike Mazzeo report, to link it back again, that Durant is recruiting Ibaka. Sure, he could be recruiting him for a vet minimum deal. I doubt that Durant is that good of friends with Serge Ibaka.
Especially because Serge is 31. This is the night the last big boy contract right there. This is the sweet spot.
And like if you're the Hawks, you have a ton of money. If you're the Knicks, you have a ton of money. Why would you not sign Serge Ibaka for 1 year, $15 million? Like, you know, just give him Bobby Portis got signed for 1 year, $15 million, plus a team option for 1 year, $15 million. So like if Bobby Portis can get that cash, I'm sure a guy Serge can.
Do you think, though, that signing Serge in the offseason, let's say we just somehow, you know, we just flip Torian and, you know, make it work, and like there's no like true damage other than that to the core rotation. Does that put us over the top in the Eastern Conference, you know, battle for supremacy?
Yes.
You think so? Okay.
Yes.
Well, then you do it. There it is, Mike. That's it. That's all you need to say. Lock it in.
Yeah. If you could put Torian Prince in a deal with your first round pick, because that's what it's going to take to get rid of Prince. So you put your first round pick with Torian Prince, you send him off to Cleveland. Say, here, Cleveland, here's the 19 overall pick. You get Torian Prince, who could be helpful to your team. He's a young guy. He can shoot threes. If that gets you Serge Ibaka, which you basically you're trading your first-round pick in Torian Prince for Serge Ibaka, and you bring back Joe Harris, then, like, the lineup combinations. I mean, there's another report out there that the Nets are searching for someone to play power forward, which I think is interesting because Kevin Durant is supposed to probably play power forward. So they want someone who's a starter. So maybe KD plays the three to start and shifts around. I don't know how that would all work. But if you have, let's just say it's just, as you said, Kyrie, KD, Serge Ibaka, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, DeAndre Jordan. If that's the squad, that's a frothy rotation.
Just thinking about it.
To go into the playoffs. That's a very like what the Raptors were with Kawhi, plus a little bit more, right? Maybe not as good defensively, but interesting, man. Everything we're hearing from a lot of the big national people is like there's going to still be a lot of shocking things happening over the next 2 weeks because we have the draft and we have free agency and a lot of fun stuff.
I'll be glued to my cable news as ever, waiting for the updates.
Hey, stay glued to the glue guys, hey, Brian.
Nice.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming back, we're going to talk so much more about the NBA draft. We have so much more conversation to jam into your ears. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week. We will do maybe a little convo before the draft.
What do you mean next week? We got the whole other part of the show.
No, I'm saying, yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, we're going to have this is live, right? Yeah. But in case I don't say it later, we'll be back next week and we have maybe a little more pre-draft conversation. Maybe not, unless there's a big trade, but we'll do something after the draft.
Don't leave. That's the real takeaway. This show still goes on.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
We are reconvening. So there's a couple of things that we're going to do. First, let's do this. Let's do Nets draft rules. We'll fit in the ones that you like.
Draft rules or roles? I couldn't. That was
rules. Rules. Yeah. So here's
sort of
how
that was
it
sort
is.
Of a Maryland twang on that. I couldn't. Yeah.
All vowels, when they're in any word, it becomes just a elongated mush. Mm. And I apologize to all of you. Okay, here's what I was trying to figure out, right? Some of the best ways to figure out how a team will draft is how they drafted in the past. Look at the Nets picks under Sean Marks. And I think there's a couple of things that you can kind of link to that the Nets really like. They do like length. Like I would say LeVert is a lengthy dude, but mostly Jared Allen, Rodions Karux. Moose's tall, even though he plays not quite tall. Nick Claxton. Jalen Hands, even as a guard, is a lengthy guard. They like that length. They do like young, sort of not quite fully developed talent. They have never drafted, you know, four-year seniors. They draft like LeVert when he was drafted was an injury risk who had a lot more room to grow. Obviously, Jared Allen is he now legal finally to drink? Moussa and Karux, both young, unproven talents. Jalen Hands barely just started shaving. Nick Claxton, the same way, like clear talent, but not nearly there put together. That is what the Nets look for. That, you know, there are some teams that do look for four-year, you know, college players. The Charlotte Hornets are known for drafting. If you become National College Basketball Player of the Year, you're probably going to be drafted by the Hornets if you're Frank Kaminsky or Kemba Walker or anyone else. You know, that is what they look for. The Nets don't seem to look for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to figure out like which guys sort of fit into that. But I want to ask you before I begin this, and we talked about this in the last episode.
Sure.
Do you think having Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving changes what the Nets will look for in this draft? Do you think that it will change their philosophy?
Of course, yeah. I think so. Obviously, I have less of a data pool to pull this take from. So, you know, that's harder to know for certain. But projecting my mind into somebody else's, you don't like what I was saying in the last episode. upside here is going to be relative to your opportunity. Okay. So if you have a guy with a lot of upside and not enough opportunity, what ultimately is the benefit of that? That seems like a recipe for miscommunication and general, not super happy vibes. So that's sort of where my head is. We've been drafting. I mean, we've been going back even 4 years, whatever, or, you know, pulling guys up from the G League and stuff. You know, we are giving people trials for, can you be the Spencer Dinwiddie? Can you, and they, you know, we've gotten very lucky and gotten the Joe Harris's and Spencer Dinwiddie's we need to establish ourselves as somewhat competitive enough to get the big draws in. So, yeah. So in my mind, I think we need to necessarily change the whole fabric of our drafting strategy. It sounds like we're on different pages here, though.
No, I don't think it's necessarily we're on different pages. I think you can do both in a way. Like, I do think you could draft length and talent and stuff. And I added character as one of the things. You know, it doesn't really fit across the board. I'm sure Sean Marks would like to think that every player the Nets pick is, like, the nicest person in the world. Who knows? I mean, I don't really want to go to the Rodion Čuruk situation, his legal situation, but, you know, that does exist. Certainly Nick Claxton and Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, like, known good dudes, particularly Caris LeVert and Jared Allen, having been playing for a while for the Nets, have known to be, like, great locker room dudes. So I imagine that also matters too. I think it has to be so it's tough because if you believe that the best way to draft is to draft length, talent, character, and sort of room to grow, to suddenly switch just because your situation changes with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving means that you're now evaluating a different, you know, set of variables, and it would probably lead to not drafting as well as you have in the past. I mean, the Nets have been a pretty good drafting team. Jared Allen is a win. Caris LeVert is a win. Rodion Čuruk, I mean, frankly, is kind of a win too, you know, talented.
Where he was picked, yeah. I mean, like Musa.
Musa, not a win. Musa, you know, I was about to say I love Musa, but I don't love Musa. No, but he had not a win. Nick Claxton is interesting.
Could go either way.
So, like, if you, I don't know, I would just stick to the thing that the Nets are doing well, which is drafting talent. I do think also having really good players gives you space to do so, like the Denver Nuggets. The Denver Nuggets layered in Bol Bol and Michael Porter Jr. And then they, you know, they already had Jokic and Murray. Murray is a draft success story. Jokic obviously is. They drafted Yusuf Nurkic, and they traded him because they had Jokic. And so I think what they've done is successful. I wouldn't go too far away from it. But I think you can do both. I think you get potential, and you can get someone who's a role player. And there's a lot of guys in this draft. I love this draft, Brian. I love it. People love to hate on this draft because the top is not interesting. I find that middle is so – it's a sexy middle.
It's been a while since we've had a draft where, like, the top is so heavily disputed. Really, like, the number one overall pick on any of these mock drafts I've seen has changed wildly from – I mean, not wildly. There's the same, like, three or four names. But usually that's pretty locked in by this point.
Yeah, and it's not like – it's not this situation where it's the LeBron, Melo, Dwayne Wade draft. It's like three or four names. You're like, everyone wants to trade down, and we're going to talk about trade down too. But I love the middle. I mean, there's a lot of 3-and-D wings. What a great middle. It's like a fantastic television show where episodes 3, 4, and 5 are fantastic. 1 and 2, not that great. You know what it is? It's like Parks and Recreation. Parks and Recreation first season was bad. Second season, not that good.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Pelle Gunnarsson, friend of the show who we've talked to before, says, hey, Glue Guys, the TV – you did this bit, yes, like two episodes ago or whatever. And he says, the TV show equivalent of Mike D'Antoni – this is where you're using it before – joining the Nets as an assistant coach must be when Sebastian Bach joined the cast of Gilmore Girls, correct? Mike, you are the Gilmore Girls junkie. Is that true?
That is a funny joke because he was a terrible actor.
Oh, thank you. He ruined it.
Well, no, but that whole show is filled with terrible actors.
He didn't.
Everyone to watch the Gilmore Girls.
It's amazing that you have takes on this. That is the depths of your knowledge.
Okay.
So wait, but so before we like bury the whole thing, because like what I wanted to do this like last, I don't know why it's stupid, but I'll just like reveal who the guy that I think makes the most sense is. That's just, that's, it's kind of painful for me to not have said it by this point. Jeez, what were they thinking? Anyways, I think the one that makes the most sense for all this, having looked deep into it, is true boy Josh Green. And I think that you're probably a Josh Green fan, though I can't be sure.
I can't be sure either, to be honest.
So Josh Green, if you're unfamiliar, is wing bro from Arizona. Basically, so here's what I think. Just going into a little bit of what we've been trying to do as a where we are, where we need to be. So like the Torian Prince, Wilson Chandler, you know, who else? We're at Temple. I would even throw Nwaba in there. Like we are looking for that position, whomever it can be. Nwaba was, I think, going to be the guy that like, you know, established himself as the kind of rangy, versatile defender who tried really hard and could hit an open three. Like the 3-and-D, but emphasis on three. And having watched a fair amount of Josh Green, I am pretty confident that this is at least my guy. Okay. All right, Mike, I'm going all in on Josh Green. Just based on this one thing, is like he is a self-designated role player. Even at this you know stage of the game, he's like, this is what I'm gonna be. He is not the kind of guy that's going to take a risky mid-range. He seems to understand he has taken on that the responsibility, the mantle of the 3-and-D player precociously. And I think that's super important for, you know, inserting yourself into meaningful minutes on a team like this right now with the amount of players that we have who are established.
And I'll say, I've seen Josh Green's name linked in like 5 mock drafts to the Nets. And usually when you see that, like Kevin O'Connor, Sam Vecenie, Jonathan Givony, Mike Schmitz, if you know those level of people that are doing mock drafts, they're not just doing them because they're like guys that they like. They're doing them because they're talking to the teams. They're talking to Sean Marks or someone else in the front office and getting information within the conversation that they're having. Now, there are a couple of other names like RJ Hampton that has been linked to the Nets more than Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were before they signed with the Nets. Josh Green is intriguing. The thing to know about Josh Green is that he was a highly ranked recruit going to Arizona. He's almost going to be 20 years old by the time they actually start playing basketball. He will be 20 years old. November 16th is his birthday. So it'll be
coming up here.
Happy birthday, Josh Green.
That's when I go back to the podiatrist. I go back to see about the foot. So big days for both of us, me and Josh.
He averaged 12 points a game at Arizona on a kind of strangely loaded, but like just a strange Arizona team. 3 assists and 5 rebounds, 78% from the free throw line, 36% from 3 on 3 attempts per game, which is, you know, not huge, but not insignificant. He kind of does a bunch of different stuff. I've heard him described as like, he is Danny Greenish, but everyone who's like not quite that tall who can shoot is described as Danny Green.
I think it's kind of like we need to begin to develop a new like I think that this the player like that who is because okay so Josh Green is thick, he's got a nice butt, right? And this goes back into my butt. Yeah. He's got a great butt and a hearty neck, so he's going to put on weight. He's 19 years. Remember what we weighed when we were 19? My god. So when I look at like a kind of comparable sort of 3-and-D player, like Aaron Nesmith is a guy that comes up from Vanderbilt, and he's like a slightly more like offensive version of this and slightly less defensive. And the reason that I think that he's like less of a good fit, and I don't know if people can disagree with me on this, has a lot to do with the like he is just not going to be building a whole lot of like big muscle very quickly in the way that I think Josh Green could possibly. And then also
Josh Green looks like he looks not like he's built, but he is like NBA ish. Like he's like his tree trunk arms and tree trunk legs. Like there's a lot of like, projectability with his size and weight. I mean, and his talent.
It's not Charles Barkley quite yet, but there is a bit of a Charles Barkley build like in there, like a young, I mean, again, we're talking about 18, 19 year old Charles Barkley or whatever, but so he's thick and he can like, he wants to be running the fast break. He does do that. Like Charles Barkley esque dunk in the fast break. That seems reckless and dangerous for a dude that's thick. And the thing that really stands out is like, you know, oftentimes you're watching one of these highlights, these, you know, videos or whatever, and they go to the defense part and they're like, wow, he like stays in front, you know, they have like the defensive highlights that are like lame. And in this one, like, he has legitimate defensive highlights, like his ability to close out and mirror people and things like that. It's like really jumps off the page. So for those reasons, I got excited about a potential. It's not exciting in like his great upside. This is going to be a guy that, you know, sets the league on fire. But I'm excited by a perfect cog in a system like what we're building here, you know.
So can I, do you have more cogs or can I throw out some cogs I like?
So those are, that's the big cog. Yeah. What other cogs you got?
So there's a couple of, there's two Bays, Tyler Bay and Sadiq Bay. Sadiq Bay from Villanova is going to go higher than the Nets are going to pick. So I refuse, I guess, really to even think about him. But if you don't know who Sadiq Bay is, he's one of the better defensive players in college basketball. He shot 45% from three. He's 6'8". 216, 77% from the free throw line, average 16 points a game. And Villanova is one of those schools now with Jay Wright that produces NBA players and they fit in immediately. You know, there's a lot of guys who've come out of Villanova recently who've been really good. I like the other Bay, Tyler Bay from Colorado, Spencer Dinwiddie's own Colorado. Let me just tell you a little bit about him. Now, he's going to be 23 years old on February 10th, which is a bit old and is against the Nets profile, but he was defensive player of the year in the Pac-12. He shot, I'm going to tell you the percentage, but don't get excited. 42% from three, but on one attempt a game, but he shot 74% from the line. Again, a good indicator for how good your 3-point shot's going to be. 9 rebounds, 14 points. He's known as being ultra athletic, 44 inch vertical. So super athletic, productive in college and defense, I'm going to love you, right? Like that is great. So best defense player in the Pac-12, which has the center from USC that everyone loves, that's going to go in the top 10. This guy was considered a better defender. And really, if you look on, I love Tankathon because they'll do the pluses and minuses. His only negatives is his draft age, which is significant. He turned over the ball a lot, which indicates that he cannot handle the ball. So he's never going to be a wing who handles for you. And he, you know, he's only shot the ball 1-3 a game at 42%, which is exciting, but only 1-3 a game means like you're terrified to shoot threes.
You're picking your spots pretty carefully at that point.
Yeah. So, but I like Tyler Bay and he's projected to go late first round. Now here's my absolute crush besides, and we talked about Pokuševski and I'll talk about him in this pod too. We talked about him last pod. My absolute crush in this draft, it's like she's all that. If this player came walking down the steps to what's the song, there she goes, there is that the one, and down the steps and he took off his glasses finally for the first time, I would be Freddie Prinze Jr. and I would be in love. Paul Reed from DePaul, give me Paul Reed here. Who Paul Reed is a second round pick and I do not for the life of me understand it. Here is who Paul Reed is. 6'9", 220 pounds. One of my favorite things to look at in the draft is steals and blocks combined. Okay. Paul Reed averaged 3 blocks per game and 2 steals per game at DePaul. Nearly 5, combining them for nearly 5 steal blocks, slocks or whatever they're called together in a game. 15 points per game, 11 rebounds per game. He only shot 2 threes a game for 31%. So he's not a phenomenal shooter. 74% for the free throw line. Ultra productive. Big defender. He was no good as a freshman at DePaul. And by the end of his junior year, which is what he is right now, he was one of the most dynamic defensive players in the country. I love him. And I know that it's like, I know at 19, that's probably too rich. It's like, because everyone has him mocked in the second round. But I've seen over and over again in drafts where if you're a guy who can both block shots and get steals, it shows that you're versatile defender and that you, that translates to the pros. It just does. Like to be able to do that. Like, so Matisse Thybulle did that at Washington and he's a great defender already as a rookie in the NBA. Now, they're different players. Thybulle's a classic wing where Reed maybe is like a backup center.
He's like an old school power forward. Is more like a sort of
Kenyon Martin.
Yeah, Kenyon Martin. It's like a Kenyon Martin. A Stromile Swift. Who else? Well, we had Area 51, Sean Williams.
He also just like looks like someone that would be hanging around the NBA for 10 years.
These are the kind of guys though that I feel most scorned by, you know, the Stromile Swifts and Sean Williams. Well, I mean, Kenyon Martin I will love forever, but like it's, you know, and for a guy to go one like that, he maybe didn't have the super duper best career. But those kinds of guys, so I'm interested by this because this is exactly the kind of pick that I would have like crushed over, like super hard crushed over. I mean, 10 years ago.
I love him. I mean, so if you look on Tankathon, he's at 48 overall to the Warriors. So he's a second round pick. So when I say that I love him, I understand that at 19, that's rich, right? Like you're looking for way more with the 19th pick overall. But this kind of dovetails into our next conversation, which we'll have, maybe not right now, but you know, I think the Nets are probably going to move that first round pick in some trade. And they do have a pick. I think it's 55 overall. I then think then they're going to buy a second round pick. John Hollinger said this in his mock draft that came out on Tuesday, which is the Nets are one of the teams that are looking to buy second round picks. And there are going to be a lot of teams that want to get rid of them because those guys add salary to your roster, even though they can be really cheap. So if the Nets are in a situation where they trade that first round pick and they only have the 55 overall, maybe they call up, you know, I'm trying to look for a team that may be desperate, like maybe the 76ers. Well, no, they probably want second round picks now that they have Daryl Morey. There will be some team within the second round, in the top half of the second round, that will just decide, we don't really need this pick and it's going to cost us a lot of money. We should just sell it to Josiah because he's so hungry. And then they get Paul Reed, and I love him. And then finally, Pokusevski. I mean, he's 7 foot tall, 200 pounds, handles the ball like a guard, can shoot threes, and I'm always going to love that player.
How do we do some Paul Rudd into Paul Reed stuff? So we can figure that out. We'll have plenty of time.
Call him Ant-Man.
Yeah,
Ant-Man. That's
nice. That's perfect.
Call him, yeah.
We can fly through some of these really quick, but some other dudes that kept popping up. SI and USA Today had Theo Maledon. Could be a Teo. Could be a Theo. It's a Theo with an accent on the E, so I never know. Never know what to do with that. But he's French, so there's also that complicates things further. Having watched a little of Theo, I've got basically he's like a Jacques Vaughn, you know, a conservative minded backup point guard who probably can't create a shot on his own, does not seem like he knows what to do in an ISO situation, but like will have a super tidy assist to turnover ratio. And that's great. And that's a super like useful utility player. And one that I could see being aligned with the Nets in some way or another by virtue of what you're talking about. If we do keep the pick and do some trades, which seems like unlikely scenario, but like, let's say that's a version of that could pan out. I don't know.
Well, my favorite thing about Teo Maledon, I think like you, I think it's a Teo, right? Yeah. If you're French, Theodore, on Tankathon, go back to the strengths and weaknesses. His only strength is his age that they list, and he'll be 19 years old, or he is 19 years old, and everything else is a weakness.
Amazing. And
that is a rough look. Now, actually, a lot of it is like he's neither a negative or a minus, or a plus or a minus. He's, you know, there's a lot of skills that he has that wouldn't classify as either. You know, he's like an average 3-point shooter ish. Average from the line, whatever. But when the only thing you got going for you is your age, not a great indicator. But like there's a couple of those guards, those European guards that we still haven't reckoned with fully, right? Like it's not the Luka issue because Luka is his own little class, but like we still don't know how to evaluate the 6'4" guard who isn't a great shooter from Europe, but like does just sort of like everything.
Sure.
You know, we haven't figured out how that translates.
I agree. And I think that like the second half of the small ball phenomenon, which I think will like invariably go like it's smaller, right? Definitionally. But like, I think that the need for traditional point guards is also going to be up for debate in the not too distant future. Like, you know, the, the vestiges of Chris Paul or whatever, that'll stick around a lot longer than, like, you know, we've pretty quickly. Well, it's actually interesting because, like, you know, having Anthony Davis's back to the basket versus, like, Jokic in the Western Conference Finals there, like, was a bit of a data point for, like, oh, like, there is still, like, a huge need for a gravity-sucking center on a championship-level team. That checks out, but that, like, the version of that, even still, like, even within that context, like, you're seeing Jokic and Anthony Davis get further and further away from the basket and do more versatile guardy type playmaking stuff on their own. I think you're going to see a version of that for point guards too. Like the identifiable, like, pass first, like, even the, like, even Rajon Rondo, I look at and say, like, oh, that's a guy who's, like, adapting in an interesting way. Like, I find, like, Jason Kidd might even be, like, the best example of this, as a guy who went from being a very traditional, like, fast break point guard into, like, all of a sudden he was, like, a post up, like, he just kind of used his girth in a different way and, like, shot threes primarily by the end of his career. And I think you're going to see a lot of people figuring out that, like, ball movement doesn't super duper necessitate a, like, primary ball handler to break down the guy. And it might be that, like, it's better to even have them, like, be off the, like, I think you're going to see Kyrie Irving play off the ball and stuff like that quite a bit. And he did that in Boston. And I just think that, like, it's all getting mixed up. All these roles are getting mixed up. And so your Teo Maladones, who have like, you know, their, you know, feet firmly planted in the traditions of point guard, are maybe doing themselves a disservice at this late stage of, you know, basketball's evolution here.
Yeah. And so I think, so we still don't know what the Nets are going to do with Joe Harris, but this draft, there are some intriguing names of shooters that will be available potentially around when the Nets pick. So I think you brought up Aaron Naismith. The dude, he shot 52% from three on 8 3 attempts a game, which is bonkers, right? So all he does is shoot. He handed out one assist per game at Vanderbilt, scored 23 points at 5 rebounds, did have 1.4 steals, which, again, not insignificant, but he is a shooter, a pure shooter. And, you know, he's going to get drafted in the first round, probably before the Nets pick. But there's him. There is obviously Tyrell Terry, who, you know, it's like discount Steph Curry type, whatever buzz, you know, a real tiny guard. Now has gained 15 pounds of muscle and is still only 175 pounds.
They did a 15 pounds of muscle meme with him? I didn't know
he's
that.
He's all the 15 pounds of muscle, but he's a great shooter too. Desmond Bane from TCU, who the Nets have been linked to, 44% from three on 6.5 threes per game. Now he has a little more versatility. He has 4 assists per game as a guy who's a shooter for the team. So that's kind of like a little more like oomph he's got going on, but he, again, is mostly a shooter. There's a couple of guys in this draft who, if the Nets hold to 19 overall, and even if they bring back, of course they bring back Joe Harris. They should. Why not? I think it's going to happen. There's a couple of guys in this draft that they could get, be really intriguing shooters. And the one thing I would say about that, why they should, is just look at what the Sixers did with Landry Shamet. Now, they screwed up by trading him for Tobias Harris, but they got Landry Shamet late in the draft. The only thing he could do was shoot. They let him shoot in Philly, and he became an asset for them that they could get a player, and they unfortunately used it on Tobias Harris. But, you know, there's tremendous value in later in the first round in getting guys who only shoot, because teams will always want shooting. No matter what happens in the NBA going forward, we're always going to be obsessed with shooting. And there's a bunch of guys like that. Now, I'm worried about more of the pick, like the Cole Anthony pick, which is who they've been linked to as well, just because he had a rough season at North Carolina. And typically, if you're a guard at North Carolina, it's just like jet fuel. Like, usually all those guys have really good years. Now, if you look back, 19 points per game, 4 assists, 6 rebounds, that isn't bad, you know, but overall his field goal percentage was 38%, which is a clunky. So I'd be a little cautious of that.
Of those like shooter guys, I do think that if you're going that direction, Tyrell Terry is the choice you take. Just because he has like demonstrated that stupid like super like 40-foot bomb that people do.
Yeah.
Like, and doing that at the collegiate level is like, I don't really remember ever outside of like Steph Curry and the like. Not to say that this is like a 1-to-1, because obviously he is not as highly touted. But it is encouraging to see him dump it artillery style from super, super far away. Aaron Naismith, also a great shooter or whatever, but is more of the traditional, you know, kind of college jump shooter in that sense. To my very amateur eye.
Let's do it. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back. And I want to do some draft day trades that are possible.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, so we know that there are teams that may want to deal during the draft. And I think if the Nets do anything during the draft, they're not going to move up, and they're probably going to use the 19th pick overall to dump Taurean Prince on someone, though I think we should have that conversation at some point, which maybe we could have it right now, which is like, have you given up on Taurean Prince?
Oof. Well, gosh, let me think. It kind of pains me to say that my ceiling is pretty low for Taurean Prince right now. I don't know why that is. I think it has a lot to do with
having watched him play basketball.
Having watched him play a fair amount of basketball. I think part of my issue with Taurean is statistically there's some issues. But also just I remember this like day one. We were talking like in the first preseason games, I watched Pascal Siakam go against Taurean Prince, and all of the D that I think was like being advertised by mostly him and his people. That was not it. I was like, oh, that's not there. That's not happening on any level. He is giving Pascal Siakam like whatever he wants in this preseason game, in which he should probably be trying to put his best foot forward. And so I knew from right there that like, oh, that part of it's going to be missing. And it wasn't just because he was he didn't have what it takes to be like a man-to-man defender. He also just would get lost. Like I was pretty surprised at the amount of minutes that he was getting on that team that last year while we were trying to be good. That was a difficult situation. So yeah, I hate to say it, but we make fun of the Twitter people for making fun of Taurean Prince, but internally, like, yeah, my ceiling's not super high for Taurean.
Yeah. The thing I will push back, not against you, but against the Taurean Prince hate. And I'm one of the people that watched him play basketball and didn't like what didn't like what I saw, right? Obviously he's making $15 million a year, so mazel tov to him in the NBA. The one pushback is that if you do have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, the thing that you will want is to fill the roster with shooters who don't really need the ball to dribble, who don't need to dribble the ball to score, right? And if you're Taurean Prince, who has been a good shooter over his career, now it's always that kind of shooting where it feels like he just keeps shooting until he makes it, and it's very J.R. Smith-ish, and you know I love J.R. Smith. It's very J.R. Smith-ish, where it's not like, it doesn't feel super flow in the offense. It feels like sometimes he's just going to get like someone passes him the ball thinking that the ball is going to keep moving, but Taurean just puts it up. But if you're Steve Nash and you can go to Taurean Prince and say, here's the situation. You just got a contract from the Nets. That's amazing. Here's what I'm going to do for you. If you listen to me and you stand in the corner of the basketball court on offense, and when the ball is in your hands, when you're wide open, is the only times you shoot, you will shoot 50% from three, and their next contract is going to be $25 million a year, or whatever it's going to be, right? Like, he's going to make money and look better if he plays a better role with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. They're going to get their guys, Joe Harris and everyone else, so many open shots. So Taurean's a good enough shooter that I do think that there's like, there should be some part of the Nets to think like, we already gave him the money. Do we really want to give up a first round pick to get rid of him when we just gave him money? There's like there's a possibility that Taurean Prince is going to be really good for the Nets in a role. He just has to kind of want to do it. And he was a little too much like, I'm just going to put up my shot whenever I want. I'm going to disrupt the flow of the offense. And if he does that on the court with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, he basically should never play.
Yeah. I mean, this is still small sample size through there. You never like to see someone decline, and he has been on a now 2 year consecutive decline. But he is just 1 year away from shooting 39%. Now he's down to 33%, which is, you know, not super great for a guy who's supposed to be your, you know, one of your primary 3-point weapons. And his 2-point field goal percentage is also considerably down. He was almost at 50% and now down to 42. So like, he had a bad year. The year before that was pretty good. You know, he was at like, he was a nearly like 40, 50, 80 guy, which is very hard to come by and are super useful.
It's tough. So part of what I wanted to do was to talk about Nets draft day trade scenarios. And I think the one overarching trade that before we get to any specifics is like the Nets, it's been rumored, I think Sam Vecenie has talked about it. The Nets have thought about attaching their current first round pick with Taurean Prince to any team like the Hawks, sending him back to the Hawks or to the Cavs or maybe even the Knicks to get rid of Prince's contract. Because if you're going to sign Joe Harris, the other way to save money is to trade Taurean Prince. And you could probably do that. And if you're the Cavs, like think about the Cavaliers, like they're not going anywhere. They do need shooting, wing shooting. And if you're the Cavs, you take, hey, I'll get a first round pick and I'll get a guy who could be a wing shooter who could be useful for us. And yeah, his contract kind of stinks, but you know, we're not going anywhere. It doesn't really matter anyways. So my one overarching draft day trade is Taurean Prince plus first round pick for just a salary dump. The Allen Crabbe, if you will. The Allen Crabbe special. There are three teams that are in the lottery that want to win. Pretty much every team. I'm not counting the Warriors because they're a special case, and I don't really know what the Nets would give up to get the second overall pick in the draft, so I'm putting them away. My three teams are the Hawks, the Suns, and the Kings. The Hawks really want to win. There's a ton of pressure on them. The Suns really want to make the playoffs. They really want to win. And the Kings seem to always want to try to win and never seem to care about building it sort of slowly and organically. Okay. So I've constructed three trades around those three teams. The first one is number 6 overall for Spencer Dinwiddie and maybe 19 overall. The Hawks would want to do it because they are desperate for a point guard to put with Trae Young, to play backup minutes, to play alongside Trae Young, because their backup point guard was horrific last year and they just had no help there. And the Hawks want to win, and Dinwiddie is certainly that. Now, why the Nets would want to do it is because you could take number 6, you could take LeVert, Jared Allen, next year's first round pick, plus a pick swap somewhere down the road, and you go to the Wizards and you say, hey, we now have a high draft pick for you. Give us Bradley Beal. Let's stop this footsie. We finally got the top 6 pick where you can take whoever you want at 6 plus whoever you want at 9. You build around those two guys with LeVert and Jared Allen and our first round pick in 2022 and a pick swap. And, you know, if our team blows up, you get our pick, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's why you trade Dinwiddie for number 6 overall, because you can get someone, you could potentially swing that along for Bradley Beal. Wow. Do you care about that?
Gosh. Well, so now I need to go back and look, because I've like purposefully ignored the top of this draft.
Well, you would only make the trade. I think you only make a trade like that for number 6 if like you know that then getting number 6 guarantees you like Bradley Beal. And I don't think Bradley Beal is going to be traded. Like the only reason why you get a high draft pick in this draft right now is to get someone really good. Now, the other person could be like Jrue Holiday. But if you give up Spencer Dinwiddie to get number 6, and then you give number 6 up to the Pelicans, are like, well, I still want Caris LeVert. You know, like they're gonna be like, okay, cool. We have number 6. We still want Caris LeVert.
Doesn't right
really affect us.
Yeah. I don't know. So were you following like Twitter the other day and like started to see the beginnings of the, which started happening, which is like the West Coast teams are inquiring about Spencer Dinwiddie stuff for you.
Oh yeah.
You did. Yeah. So for me, like, you know, usually when that happens, I get a little bit like, yeah. So here's my feeling about trading Spencer Dinwiddie at this point is that like, I have learned to never bet against Spencer at this point. Like, I still think that that dude has like whatever that thing is that of like, just like feeding off of the like constant underdogness that he is faced with and like always converting that into just like better play, better statistics across the board. Like each and every year, he's just added to his point totals, added to every like part of his game. And I'm at the place now where I just don't bet against him on any level. Like, I'm not sure that you're not going to get like the worst player out of that deal, like with Drew Holiday and Spencer Dinwiddie, which is where I'm at with this stuff right now.
Yeah. That's what makes it so hard to think about. Like, you know, I kind of talked about this thing with the Drew Holiday situation, which is like, I think if the Nets fan base doesn't want to trade Caris LeVert for Drew Holiday because everyone loves Caris LeVert. They all think so highly of him. We don't really know Drew Holiday. Like, we haven't been watching that many Pelicans games over the years. But when you listen to sort of big, you know, NBA national writers, they're all like, Drew Holiday's amazing. He's one of the best defenders in the NBA. One of the greatest locker room presences we have right now in the NBA. And he obviously can still score. Like, he score 20 points a game or whatever. I think it's like one of these scenarios where if Drew Holiday played three games for the Nets, everyone would be like, oh shit, Drew Holiday. Remember when we saw Kyrie Irving in the first game of the year?
Yeah.
We were like, oh, yeah. He's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's this, I think it wouldn't be that level of amazingness because Kyrie Irving is so like distinctly artistic
you
on really, the court.
You think that Drew Holiday has that ability to like pop up the page in that way?
I think if they traded for him and he was on the roster and he was playing with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, we would immediately be like, oh, this makes so much sense. Like, it because he would defend the best player on the other team perfectly. He would score enough where it's like your big three is putting up 70 points a game already. And he probably would become a better shooter because all of it would be awful. Drew Holiday's never played with a point guard like Kyrie Irving. So, and he would, as you talked about, allowing Kyrie to be off ball. Drew Holiday also lets Kyrie Irving come off ball in certain possessions. And so does Kevin Durant, obviously.
You know, you might be right. But again, like, I'm still just in like the, you know, I'm using my three head evaluation of just like point totals and things like that. Like, watching Spencer Dinwiddie stack go from 12 to 16 to 20 points per game. You know, his volume has been all over the place because he's been asked to do different things every single year. And he just like kind of does it and gets better. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me. Right. What I'm saying is that I've grown too attached to Spencer to be objective about it anymore. That's really what this is.
Yeah. And I think too many of these trades would involve Spencer Dinwiddie selling low. Spencer Dinwiddie is still 25-5 and has, as you say, is so adaptable. Like, you know, if you get rid of him, like, okay, you're losing a big chunk of production.
His percentages are bad, but people have to realize it's like his percentages are bad because he basically comes in and plays one of three positions and he does it for like, it's not just because he's doing it like once in a while. For like 30 games in a row, he'll either be a small forward or a point guard. And it's like, that's a really interesting position to be put in, you know, time and time again.
I hate Spencer Dinwiddie trades, but here's another one for you, Ryan.
Oh,
so we did the Hawks. The Hawks would have been 6 overall for Dinwiddie and maybe 19 overall. And the reason why you do that is so you flip that number 6 to get Beal or someone else even better. The Suns at number 10 overall. Here's a fun one. Number 10 overall goes to the Pelicans. J.J. Redick goes to the Nets, and Spencer Dinwiddie goes to the Phoenix Suns. Of course, the Suns are desperate for a point guard to pair with, you know, they have Ricky Rubio, but you could do Ricky Rubio, Dinwiddie, and Booker as your backcourt. That's pretty incredible. The Pelicans, you know, obviously they're building this young core, and this is a deal that allows them to get younger and still keep Drew Holiday. And why the Nets do it is, just think about this lineup for a second, okay? J.J. Redick, one, already lives in Brooklyn. Everyone knows that. He's obsessed with the Brooklyn Nets. He's had on Steve Nash and Kevin Durant, and I think a couple other Nets people on the show, and he's had Bradley Beal, famous Nets target. And you could trot out a crunch time lineup of Kyrie Irving, J.J. Redick, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, and KD. And LeVert is the worst shooter on that lineup. You have two of the best shooters in the NBA in Joe Harris and JJ, pure shooters. And KD and Kyrie, I mean, frankly, are two of the best shooters in the NBA as well. It would be an insane, defensively, the amount of pressure you'd put on a defense by having JJ Redick and Joe Harris rolling off picks everywhere all over the floor and then getting open from in the corners while Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving have the ball in their hands would just be bonkers. And, you know, so what? Do you want to give JJ Redick up for Spencer Dinwiddie? I don't know. But for the team, you just add another shooter that's an elite shooter like that who wants to win, you know, is ready to do whatever it takes to win. I think it's interesting just to think about. And that's the way you get them is by getting, you know, because the Pelicans wouldn't want Spencer Dinwiddie, but they would want maybe 10 overall. And then you get JJ Redick. Mm. Could be interesting.
Could be.
The final one, number 12 to the Nets for Jared Allen. Number 12 is the Kings pick. Kings get Jared Allen because the Kings are always looking for a center. And Jared Allen would be a legit starting center to pair with De'Aaron Fox. And here's why the Nets would do it, okay? The Nets don't want to pay Jared Allen, I don't believe. Jared Allen is up for an extension. They're already paying DeAndre Jordan $10 million a year. DeAndre Jordan will start for the Nets unless if Steve Nash is such a convincing people person that he can convince Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving to tell their friend DeAndre that he should be a bench player again. Pretty much the reason why Kenny Atkinson was fired was because he was starting Jared Allen over DeAndre Jordan. So all indications are that DeAndre's the starter, making $10 million a year. You trade Jared Allen because you're not going to pay him, and you pick up number 12 overall, and here's who you could maybe kind of get in number 12 overall. Then you're kind of in the Devin Vassell, the Sadiq Bey, Patrick Williams range. Aaron Nesmith is in that range, and maybe someone in the top whatever falls out. Maybe Killian Hayes for some reason drops. And he falls all the way to 12. You know, so 12 is a good spot where you're maybe getting a guy who falls who shouldn't have, or you're at the top of that sort of next tier. And the Nets then, you can use 12, or they could package 12 and 19 to move up even more and move up to, you know, number 8 or 7 or whatever. So in my head, I think Jared Allen may be traded. I think if you're going to go in the draft and you can get rid of him, and then you can get a young rookie on a rookie scale deal.
Get rid of him. Listen to this.
Well, he's not going to be on the team. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, I love Jared Allen. Unless if Steve Nash fully comes in and says, this is the most important thing that we can do is that Jared Allen is going to be the starter. And DeAndre, you're going to get 20 minutes a game, but Jared Allen's going to get the other 28 at center. And I just can't imagine that's what's going to happen.
Wow.
But that's it.
Live draft coverage on the 18th from Mike. Are we gonna get it?
Yeah. I'm gonna be there at the draft.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be talking. Anyways, any other things you're looking out for the draft before we go?
No, that's really you can feel I'm petered out. I've got nothing. That's it. I'm dead. Yeah,
I'm so dead. Thank you all for listening. We will, of course, do draft episodes, and if you know the NBA's sort of trade season begins fully, you know, the Monday of the draft before the draft, so we may hear a trade, and if there is a trade involving the Nets, Brian and I will do a pod, and please find us here on Nets Daily and The Athletic and everywhere else.
Nice. Your voice is so gristled now. You're like. You went through something.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah. Bye.